104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with a big story of the day.
Hi, welcome to the show. I am in a super good mood because, well, I'm joined by one of my favorite people today, and that's Nikki Jabala, whose name I tortured for years. And I figured there's a trick to saying your name the correct way.
What's that?
It's really, really tricky. You say job, and then you say Vala.
I'm pretty sure I told you that trick like 3 years ago, and you're just now using it. I'm glad it's working for you. That's so exciting.
Yeah, for years it was, I don't know what I was thinking. It's a pretty simple trick, Jabala. It's so funny how just something simple will stick with you or trigger, and then you're good.
Yeah.
But Nikki, something amazing happened just a few minutes ago.
Driven to deep left field, way back and gone. Chris Iannetta, 1-0 Colorado, finally.
Drew Goodman on the call, AT&T Sportsnet. Good job, Drew. This was, boy, Richie, we may have to look it up, but it might have been historic how long the Rockies had gone without scoring a run.
Straight zeros for like 10 innings, right?
Oh, more than that. Well, I think it was 20 innings. I think it was 20 innings in a row, maybe 21 before that home run, and then one run in like 40.
Yeah.
I mean, absurd.
You know who scored that one run? A Tar Heel.
Chris Iannetta.
Yep, Tar Heel. That's probably why he scored.
You have an absurd amount of pride about your North Carolina heritage, correct?
Yeah. Well, it's more the school. I loved Carolina. I loved my time there. So
Carolina was the great journalism school, great broadcasting school. I knew that when I was applying to colleges. Went for a visit with my dad down there, just blown away. Uh-huh. Blown away by everything. At the time, still wanted to play college baseball. This is in the 80s, long time ago. And I thought, North Carolina, you could do it all. And recruiting in the 80s with sports was way different than it is now. I mean, back in the day, you literally could just show up and maybe you got a shot, especially at the non-scholarship sort of schools or non-scholarship sports, mm-hmm. baseball being one of them. So the concept of just showing up and saying, I'm here for the team, it's not actually crazy. Back then, you could do it. Now, it's kind of a different deal. Couldn't believe how beautiful this place was. I mean,
it was gorgeous. It was really
perfect.
Gorgeous.
So,
although I think Boulder is gorgeous. I keep telling people, if I hadn't grown up in North Carolina,
yeah.
and that was basically 40 minutes from my house, if I had grown up here, I would have stayed and gone to Boulder, because it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
But I loved my time at Carolina.
Well, I applied, Nikki. Applied to 5 schools.
I applied to, I think it was 10. I got into Miami and North Carolina because I wanted to go into medicine when I got out of high school. I don't know what I was thinking. I got rejected by Duke.
Did apply to Duke.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I wanted to go to Duke.
Why weren't you good enough to go to Duke?
Oh, I didn't have... I mean, it was like a 4.3 GPA or something, but, you know, I still wasn't...
Not good enough?
Apparently not. What can you do?
Well, I do think Zion Williamson is probably a bit of better student in person to be at Duke than you. You know, I do agree with you there. They probably got that right. North Carolina rejected me, if you didn't see where I was going with that whole thing. So the only school I was rejected by was...
But you got Syracuse, which is a great school.
I did. Lower standards, apparently, at Syracuse than North Carolina.
Wait, where else did you get in?
Emerson College, Boston University, and Ithaca.
Oh. Syracuse, all are good schools. Syracuse is a great school, though.
Well,
great journalism.
I wouldn't have wanted to, it's easy for me to say, I wouldn't have wanted to go to Harvard if I got in. I wanted to be a broadcaster, so broadcasting schools. So North Carolina for you was journalist. Wait, you wanted to be in medicine?
Yeah. I wanted to do pre-med. I wanted to become a neurologist.
So how did you get into... So what was your major at North Carolina?
It was journalism, but I changed it 5 times to get there. So I went in on the pre-med track, realized it would be hard and I wasn't smart enough. So 2 weeks later, I changed to psychology, English, political science. And then at the end, this was probably at the end of my sophomore year, I went to journalism. I had a really great professor, sports journalism professor, Tim Crothers, who was a longtime writer at Sports Illustrated. Mm-hmm. And I took a night course just trying to get my grades up or whatnot.
Sports journalism class.
Sports journalism.
Okay.
I loved it. Absolutely loved it. So I just continued to take more journalism courses. And I thought, hey, I can do this.
Why sports journalism?
I took that class just because I thought it'd be easy and fun, to be honest with you. And it was. It was tremendous. But I have family members who are big-time journalists, so I was kind of one of those kids. I'm not doing that. I'm doing my own thing, mm-hmm. that type of. So I quickly realized that was stupid and decided to stick with journalism, and luckily it worked out.
But specifically sports journalism, what did you find intriguing about that in North Carolina?
Well, while I was at North Carolina, I worked for the student newspaper, and we got to cover all the teams. So I covered the women's soccer team, which was one of the greatest things in my career, period, because that team was really, really good, really talented, and has been for years.
Okay.
And I covered women's basketball. I covered baseball. So that was a neat experience because you're covering athletes that are essentially already professional.
This is for the Daily Tar Heel or something?
Yep,
something
exactly.
like that? So that's a volunteer sort of thing, right?
And I freelance for local newspapers. And so it wasn't a traditional college experience for me because I worked throughout, working for newspapers, writing for the student newspaper, and just trying to get as many clips as I can. And then I did, a few internships.
Who was your writing hero?
My writing hero at the time was Rick Riley. I really loved Rick Riley, but it's kind of changed over the years. I mean, Seth Wickersham is one of my favorite writers now. Lee Jenkins is fabulous. Mm-hmm. I was so sad when he left SI, but he's just fabulous. Mm-hmm. And incredibly nice guy, too. So
you're at North Carolina, just going through the Nikki Javala history, and you're in the sports.
Yeah.
Did you play sports?
I played sports growing up, but that kind of ended in high school, and I realized I'm just not that good.
So, what were you not that good in?
Basketball at the time. I played softball, basketball, and soccer a little bit, but then I realized you have to run a lot.
So how far did you go there?
Basketball, I went through junior year of high school.
Okay.
I was a solid 12th man. softball, I went all the way until they made you switch to fast pitch. This is just rec softball.
Okay.
I was legit at slow pitch because it was easy, right? Then they make you go to fast pitch, and that thing comes in super fast.
Yeah.
I was like, nope, I'm good. We're going to call it a career. So both my brother, and I have an older brother, younger sister, and they're both Division I athletes, and I'm just the non-athletic regular person in the middle. So,
but you shared an interest in it at least.
Oh, yeah, my whole family.
The stories of it.
My mom's the real athlete. My mom played basketball and tennis at Penn State. She's legit.
So you're in college now. You get out of high school, but you do love sports. You end up there. How many women are doing sports broadcast or journalism at North Carolina? A few, a lot, a little.
There's actually a good number. I mean, it's certainly not equal. But when I was there, there were at least a couple other women on, working for the student newspaper. There were at least a couple other women who were covering UNC just as the beat for the local paper, the Raleigh News and Observer. So there's a good amount. Like Brooke Pryor, who covers the Chiefs for the Kansas City Star, she went to Carolina. She's tremendous. So there were a good amount.
Justina Anderson went to North Carolina.
Justina Anderson, yeah.
Are you?
She was a track athlete. She's legit.
I know. Yeah. Were you and her?
She's older than me.
She's a little older than you. Okay.
So, she's a great journalist and also a great athlete. I can't compete with that.
Yeah, Justina competed at North Carolina, right? As a track athlete.
Yeah. So
you're out of school now. Then what?
Big decision. I kind of took a risk and I had an internship with Sports Illustrated for Kids after my junior year. This was in New York. After my senior year, I got another internship with SI, and I decided to take it instead of a full-time position. And I just got really lucky. I moved to New York, did my internship, and before it was done, they offered me a full-time position.
Wow.
So
writing what?
I was actually producing and editing, so I was on the other side of things.
Gotcha.
So I kind of started out pretty low on the totem pole over there. It was on the website. I actually edited MMA and boxing, which was an interesting experience. And then I moved to NBA, and that's how I got to work with Lee Jenkins, and that was Jack McCallum.
So is your editing's more than your writing's in Sports Illustrated at the time?
Yeah, I did editing at SI and the New York Times. And then when I moved back to Denver, I switched back to writing. I always wanted to be in writing, though.
So you're in New York. You're probably not making a whole heck of a lot of money at the time.
Right.
Are you living in Manhattan?
Yes, I lived on the Upper East Side, which was probably the only part of the city that I could afford. It wasn't easy. I mean, I was, you know,
how many square feet are we talking here?
I had a roommate. Oh, I had an older woman and her dog. I was a roommate with them first. I had roommates all the way up until
my
last
apartment. Did you know the older woman?
No,
and her
Craigslist.
You just moved in.
Yeah, I didn't have a choice. So I just took the spare bedroom, and that was that. And then I got, like...
How was that?
It was
weird.
Yeah, it was a long year, but it was worth it. I mean, yeah.
So you don't have a lot of stuff. I mean, you're living in one room.
Like I'm a minimalist because I've moved so much over the years. So
you're with the woman and her dog. What was the dog's name?
I don't even remember. It was a little pug.
Okay.
I don't mean to offend anybody that has pugs. I'm not a big pug fan. I like big dogs.
Okay.
So this thing would just kind of yap all the time, and she wouldn't take it out as often as she needed to.
Okay.
And so that was, it was an interesting year.
The year winds up, and you got to do what? Where are you off to next?
Then I find another roommate. I moved to, I think Brandon Kristol was in this building at some point, too. It's called Normandy Court. It's this big
complex.
You
knew Brandon when he was in New York?
No, but we had a conversation recently, and he said he lived there at one point.
Do you know why Brandon was in New York?
I do not.
He was there to produce an all-female TV show.
No way.
And it didn't work out.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then he was in love with a woman who's now his wife, and he kind of moved back. But he was there for a period of time.
Well, apparently we lived in the same building.
Oh, too funny.
It's called Normandy Court. It's a big complex, and I lived there. I lived in like four different apartments within that same building throughout I was in New York for about 7 years.
As you're in New York, how's your passion for sports growing at that point? Where's your interest level going?
Once I got onto the NBA beat, I really loved it. My family's a big basketball family.
And now are you writing for Sports Illustrated and the New York Times at this point? Are you?
I would write occasionally, but it was mostly online. My role was as an editor and producer.
So you knew at some point, if I'm going to do this, I got to get out. I got to go somewhere else, right?
Yeah. So the New York Times was probably one of the greatest years. It was a year and a half I was there. That was amazing. I've never learned so much in that amount of time. Because you're sitting, I don't know if anybody's seen the New York Times building, but it's just completely open. It's like an atrium, and you're sitting in this main level, and you're surrounded by the executive editor, and it's super high-pressured. I mean, they check everything to a T. You got like four different layers of editing.
You
got
to be good.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to know your stuff.
Yeah. So like when major
news... Take off the training wheels. Here we go.
Exactly. So when major news broke and I would run the homepage of the New York Times. You got like five or six people all top of the masthead who are looking over you to make sure it's
a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
But you learn a lot quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like Tom Izzo screaming at you.
Exactly.
You're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
It's not a bad thing.
Exactly. So...
But eventually you say, I got to spread my wings, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I wanted to do more. I wanted to do more than, you know, run the homepage and edit other people's work, though I learned a lot from it. So my parents moved out to Denver.
Oh,
They moved out first.
Okay.
So
Why'd they move out here?
My mom's brother lived out here, and she wanted to retire, and she thought this would be a good place. And my dad loved it, so it worked out.
Wow.
So
okay.
They came out in 2012, and then I moved out in 2014.
With a job or without a job?
With a job with the Denver Post.
What a awesome thing then, right?
Yeah, I got lucky. So
did you live with your parents?
for about a week. And that was enough. I got an apartment up in Stapleton. It was just one of the first places I saw off the highway.
So you're hired by the Denver Post to be...
to be a digital sports producer.
Digital sports producer.
Much of what I was doing at like SI and the New York Times.
Not a beat writer, but...
Nope.
We're on DenverPost.com, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this was 2014, training camp opens. This is a year where they're announcing that Pat Bowlen is stepping down.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first day of doing anything covering the Broncos. Yeah,
really?
That
day of training camp when John got all emotional?
That was my first day.
Wow.
So I was just kind of the third wheel that year with Mike Kliss and Troy Rank, and I just kind of helped out wherever they wanted me to. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just glad to help out on the beat and be writing again, and, you know, I would be there at home games. I wouldn't travel.
And were you aware of Joe Neeson and Lindsey Jones at that time?
Yep, I knew about...
I mean, there had been a nice little tradition of female writers at the Denver Post already.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kliss leaves.
Yeah.
And then Troy leaves.
Yeah, and I just keep getting moved on up. I don't know if they necessarily wanted me to move up, but they didn't have, like, I guess they didn't have a better option for what they could financially do. So
now you're covering the NFL as a beat writer.
Yeah.
Boom, boom, hello.
Yeah. My thinking was if I was ever going to go back into writing, cover a team, cover a league, it would be the NBA. I grew up around basketball.
Mm-hmm.
I love basketball. I love watching the NBA. But now that I look back on it, I'm really glad it happened the way it did. I love covering football.
So
I love it.
So you really weren't into football that much. Until you got basically the beat job with the Broncos.
Yeah.
Pretty wild.
Very wild.
Talk about just stepping into the fire, huh?
Well, yeah, but I got lucky. It worked out. I mean, the timing was...
I think you have to be talented to get lucky. I think, I think it's a combination of things.
Perhaps.
It's being in the right place.
You're making me feel better. Thank you.
Well, it's being in the right place at the right time, but having a certain amount of abilities to that, you know, that can happen.
Yeah.
That you make it an easy decision. But you did leave the Denver Post.
I did. I left right around this time last year, actually. Went to The Athletic. And our executive...
Why was that a better choice for you than staying with the Denver Post?
I really love my time at the Denver Post. I learned a lot. You got to remember, they gave me an opportunity to go back to writing. And that meant everything. And I'll say this, and it's going to put a damper on what some people think is really going on, but... I love Mike Kliss. I have a job because of Mike Kliss. I am covering the Broncos because of Mike Kliss. We just like to push each other's buttons. But I wanted to try something new. I wanted to kind of expand what I did and kind of get out of the grind of newspaper writing. And it is a grind. It's a mm-hmm. lot. And I wanted to be able to do kind of deeper stories that are much longer than they can fit in a newspaper. That's just the way it works in a newspaper. You only have a set amount of space.
Right.
So I wanted to challenge myself, and I did that. And I'm working for Paul Fichtenbaum, who's our head of editorial content. Mm-hmm. He was a guy that hired me at SI originally. So it's nice to be kind of reunited with him and a lot of people I worked with at SI and other stops. So
what's happening to the newspaper?
That's a good question. I think they're in a tough spot right now. I'm grateful. I love that the Denver Post is still there.
Mm-hmm.
I think their ownership issue is awful. Mm-hmm. What they're doing to the paper, they're basically pillaging it. But I think it's hard to keep up. I mean, it's a product that is moving toward more digital, but at the same time, they're making a lot of their money still on the print product. So trying to balance that has become very difficult.
You are joining us as a contributor. There's a press release I saw. There's a publicity photo. I mean, it's just fantastic.
I brushed my hair for that photo. I wore an adult shirt for that photo. So you're welcome.
If you work in this industry that is just so male-oriented, do you have to be one of the guys?
No, I can. No, I think there are probably some people who try to pretend. pretend like, oh, I know this, I know this. I'm not one to do that. I will never pretend to know more than I do
because this
or
is
to
a,
be anything.
This is a little bit
I'm
different.
Not.
You're not on TV.
Right.
You're not a talk show host.
Right.
Although you are today. But you're in the weeds to me. Like you're in the thick of it. And when you talk to other people who are really on that daily beat in the thick of it, it's a different life.
Yeah.
You know, those that are on just TV, it's relatively easy, depending on who you are, to cruise in and cruise out because whatever you need lives more or less on the surface.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. When you do what I do, it's pretty easy just to actually, to be quite honest with you, just sort of sit back and observe.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a big reason for me to prod around or poke around, not necessarily. It's more of finding out what's going on and be able to, you know, use that as a base for my opinion. But it's different for you and for Cliff and Jeff Legwald and Troy and the folks at the Post, whoever that happens to be now, Ryan, who's there now. That's a different crew. Would you agree with me on that?
Yeah.
What's that world like?
It's different. It's interesting. I always look at it as it has pluses and minuses. Like being a woman in the locker room, usually one of, you know, maybe only a couple women in the locker room. You're on the beat all the time. It takes a while to earn that trust. And it's going to take probably a little bit longer than your male counterparts to earn the trust of the players, of the coaches, of anybody else who you need to talk to do your job. Because there's always going to be that perception, fair or not, that as a woman you don't know as much.
Mm.
Or that you shouldn't be there, or that you shouldn't be covering.
But coming into the beat, you really didn't know that much, to be fair,
no,
right?
No, it's totally fair. It takes a while to get acclimated. I'm in, what, year four full-time, and
yeah.
I still feel like it's an adjustment for me. But it's always going to take a little bit longer as a woman because you have to earn that trust. You have to work a little bit harder. You have to do a little bit more than everybody else, and I'm okay with that.
How much football do you have to know compared to just knowing what the stories are?
You have to know football, and you have to know
people
how to
see
find
through that
the
right
answers.
Away?
Yeah, you have to know the game. The stories are very important.
Mm-hmm.
You also have to know what you don't know and be able to learn it and study it and, you know.
Be okay with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Be all right to ask a question you know is going to sound dumb at some point.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But that's where I think there are some advantages. Like, you know, maybe sometimes players are more trusting with you mm-hmm. on certain topics than they are with other reporters, you know. And as one of, you know, if you're the only or one of only a couple women in the locker room, it's hard to forget you. They remember that face. They know who you are.
I feel, and it's been awesome, by the way, to know Joan and to know Lindsay uh-huh. and to know Josina and to, you know, I go way back to, you know, friends of mine in Buffalo. And I was in this sports world. I've been in it for a long time. And I think it's really hard on some aspects for women. I don't think they're given as, I think it's difficult. I think it's a challenge to say the least. However, I'll tell you this. I think if you earn your stripes and people respect you, I don't think it's a problem whatsoever. I think you are, not one of the guys, that maybe is the wrong way to say it, but one of the crew. How about mm-hmm. that?
Yep.
One of the assembled people. And I'll tell you this flat out. I know for a fact there's plenty of male reporters who just don't make that inner circle whatsoever for a variety of reasons. They don't show up enough. Nobody really has their respect. There's nothing magical about that. It's kind of like dog eat dog, uh-huh. period.
Yeah.
But to compliment you, after all these years that I've been here for almost 20 years here in Denver, you fit in like a glove. And not only that, but you've done some incredible reporting. And I trust your opinion on things that are going on with the Denver Broncos as much as anybody. And we've had a fun, I would call it somewhat of a partnership, especially with the ownership situation, where we talk and share information and just sort of kind of piece together this very, very complicated story. And, you know, I have nothing but the highest regard for you and the work you put in. And if you want to read what Nikki's done about this very, very complicated story, which is just getting more complicated, by the way. It's not like this thing is
it's not going away.
It's not going away, and it's not lightening up. And despite, you know, the perception by some that it is going away, not yet. That's for sure.
Yep.
So we can dig into that. We're glad that you're here.
Thanks.
If you've got a question for Nikki, she's the insider's insider. The RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. You can certainly call as well. So we'll just kind of keep things open here today. But there's a mock draft. I love my mock drafts. I love the mock drafts, Nikki, because they're such a great springboard. And Kiper and McShay have one. There's some crazy picks there for the Broncos, and we'll get into that next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
If C-Mac, Nikki Jabala joins us as a regular contributor and joins me for the next couple of days. Rockies win 1-0. Tar Heel legend Chris Iannetta with the go-ahead homer in the top of the 11th. So the string of scoreless innings for the Rockies is actually still kind of overwhelming, but they picked up the W. That's the most important thing. And we'll have a special war room tomorrow from 1 to 3 talking baseball. Opening day, we're down at Blake Street Tavern, and the weather's supposed to be spectacular on Friday. So things looking good in that direction. Nikki, what do you think about mock drafts? What's your mock draft opinion?
I think they're a waste of time, but that's a buzzkill, right?
No, if that's how you really feel, why do you think they're a waste of time?
Just because I think a lot of these are just guesses. Well, they are. They're just guesses. And so much can change, especially the day of the draft. You think about how much is going on, and we've seen it countless times, even in recent years with the Broncos, how they've traded up a few spots, or, you know, you think they're going in looking at a quarterback, and they come out with a pass rusher.
Here's where I'm at with mock drafts, is if you just look at one person's mock draft, I will inherently agree with you.
Yeah.
However, if you sort of look at these mocks collectively, you start seeing trends. And in general, through the, you know, decade long that I've, you know, done draft coverage here at The Fan, there's always surprises. But it is kind of remarkable how often the trends tend to play themselves out.
Yeah.
At least in terms of position of interest, type of person, the tendency of, like, who's the top two or three guys in every position. So while the drafts might not be completely accurate, nobody's really are, it gives you a great sense of what could happen and who these people are, at least for the first round and a little bit into the second round. So I take them all with a grain of salt. And I, you know, I'm not breaking down film like some other great journalists are. I'm not producing my own top 100, but I'll look at mocks every day, and I'll see other people who do that work, and I'll collectively put things together.
Yeah.
So when it comes to the Broncos, we're looking at Mel Kiper's 1-64 and Todd McShay, and they did this without trades, it looks like. Yeah, I don't see any. I remember they were sniping on each other on TV last year because they were supposed to just do a straight-up mock, and then McShay threw in some trades, and Mel got a hair out of place. No trades in this scenario, and I do think trades are obviously a critical part of the draft, but in no trades, Mel Kiper's got, in order, Kyler Murray, Arizona, Bosa, San Francisco, Josh Allen, Jets, Quinnen Williams, Oakland, Devin White, Tampa Bay, Dwayne Haskins, Jets, Juwan Taylor, Jacksonville, Montez Sweat, Detroit, Ed Oliver, Buffalo, and TJ Hockenson, Denver, with Drew Lock going to Cincinnati, DK Metcalf, Rashawn Gary, and Daniel Jones going to Washington. So he's got a quarterback going to the Redskins, to the Bengals, to the Giants, and to the Cardinals. Could you see that happening?
Yeah, I mean, with all these mock drafts, you're just plugging in players based on need. Yes, you're considering other factors, but go back to when they started these mock drafts. It was for the Broncos, it was quarterback. Then it turned into cornerback. Now we're in tight ends. You're just plugging all the needs. You know, there was offensive linemen. I remember Jonah Williams was mocked for the Broncos for a while. Then they got Juwan James. So they're just going down the list of plugging in holes. So
Kuiper's,
you know,
got T.J. Hockenson, tight end. And then in the second round, Wiggins' own, visiting the Broncos today. What a day in the life of Dalton Risner today. Correct?
Indeed.
Dalton! Well, I don't know. Is he done yet or not? Is he still there?
Do we
know
what's... Depends if they take him out to dinner.
Well, Dalton, I hope you are having the day of your life.
Get a steak.
It is awesome. It'd be great to have Dalton Risner for a lot of reasons part of the Denver Broncos. By the way, right before Dalton Risner in Mel Kiper's draft, he's got the Buffalo Bills taking N'Keal Harry. We'll get back to that in a second. Todd McShay, he's got Kyler Murray, Nick Bosa, Josh Allen, Quinnen Williams, Tampa Bay, Devin White, Giants, Dwayne Haskins. So his top six are exactly the same as Mel Kiper. Did I get that right? Yeah, exactly the same.
Nope.
Then Juwan Taylor. The only way he goes different, starting at eight with T.J. Hockenson, Buffalo, Rashawn Gary, and then he's got the Broncos taking Drew Locke. Okay. Let's see who he's got in the second round, too. Second round, he's got Deebo Samuel, a wide receiver out of South Carolina, with N'Keal Harry going three spots ahead to Jacksonville.
Who was wide the last receiver. Tight end taken in the top 10? I think there's only been like three over the last 10 years or so, right?
A little research on that, fellas. I don't know. Last tight end taken in the top 10, I don't know. Couldn't tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Ebron might have been the last one. So that's rare. But
rare.
It wouldn't preclude them from doing it.
Drew Locke, quarterback.
Doesn't really move the needle for me, I can tell you.
Why doesn't it move the needle? For personal reasons or
football
reasons?
No, football reasons.
I mean, why for football? Why does that not make sense for football reasons?
You draft a kid at number 10. He's obviously, you're saying he's your long-term answer. Do you believe Drew Locke is the long-term answer of the position? From what you've seen of him at Missouri, do you feel like he can be the long-term answer? I don't. I would rather they stick with what they have and you know draft a guy in later rounds and then see where they're at in 2020. They have to draft a quarterback, no doubt.
No, they don't have to. They don't have to.
I think they do, though.
For what? You know what? That's a good, solid, fundamental question. It's the genesis of the massive debate I have with Mike Evans and the khaki pants beep beep company man policy of the morning show that we have here, who they just want to stay right in their spot. They want to take they want to go auto draft. They want to take best player available. They don't want to think too hard. They don't want to do anything. They want to take a quarterback when it's convenient later on. They're into the morning show. Our morning show's into the Fantastic Four. The Fantastic Four are Will Greer, Ryan Finley, Clayton Thorson, and Stidham. That's the Fantastic Four.
Gotcha.
Because they make fun of me for the Hall of Fame Five for last year. The, you know, the five quarterbacks drafted in the first round who were all starters. They're into backups and development. But there's a big flaw with that. And this is a fascinating mock by Todd McShay. Because I think he's playing directly into the Broncos' hands. We'll explain next.
You're listening to The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
D-Mac with Nikki Javala. Great news as we announce Nikki will be one of our Broncos insiders this year. And I'm thrilled to have her. Have you here with me today?
Glad to be here.
The quarterback situation. Can't get rid of it. Can't get away from it. I believe the Broncos are in the midst of what Zach Bye, which I agree with, has coined the great quarterback mist. Meaning, I think there's nothing to it. It doesn't make any logical sense. Based on everything else that's already happened this year. None. to take a quarterback at 10. If you're going to do it, the time was last year.
Right.
Or the time may be next year. This year, it's ridiculous. So, the best move for the Broncos, the best move for most teams that really don't need or want a quarterback or don't have a, if you get past the Quinnen Williams, you get past the Nick Bosa, if you get past that a little bit, you enter a kind of a wacky territory where what team, Nikki, wouldn't want to trade back?
Ones that have a glaring need that need a quarterback or could use one of those
big time guys.
Right.
You need or want Von Miller. You're at 2, like the Broncos. Right. You're not getting out of that. That's
right.
Hey, we got our guy. I mean,
Elway always says this, and it's not cliche, but to trade back, you have to also find somebody who's willing to trade up.
That's correct.
Not easy.
That is correct. So this is why you create the QB mist.
Right.
You invite all 4 quarterbacks to come to Dove Valley to hang around. You go out and work out Clayton Thorson, whoever he is. Northwestern.
If you could see the hand motion he's making.
Go to Illinois. We're off to see Clayton Thorson. That sort of thing. Then you start feeding things to people, right? Mm-hmm. I have been told, and I don't know what you know. I'm curious what you know. But I've been told that Todd McShay has been better over the years in terms of the Broncos. Well, Nikki, that's not an accident, is it? Because who's Todd McShay picking up the phone and talking to?
I think we know.
He's not calling me. Mm-hmm. Is he calling you?
Nope.
Who do you think Todd McShay is calling? Hello? John? Or Todd McShay is talking to Adam, who's talking to John. And this is where it gets brilliant. If you can build up the confidence, and if you're John, this year, you're going to be throwing some people under the bus. But maybe for the past couple of years, you've been feeding them some good stuff. So this is brilliant. This is Todd McShay feeding. This tells me exactly what's going on. There's no doubt the disinformation campaign for the Broncos is at an epic high, and I love it. When Todd McShay comes out with a mock and he says it's going to be Drew Lock, that makes absolutely, positively zero sense. None for what everything else they've done. Or am I wrong? Am I missing something? Is there a world based on everything, based on the free agent moves, based on Flacco, based on the length of John Elway, Joe Ellis's contract, based on the CBA, the transition in ownership, is there a world where Drew Lock makes sense?
Yeah.
What's that world?
Joe Flacco has no more guaranteed money left. You say he's their guy, but you also said Case Keenum was your guy. So you got a year with Joe Flacco, maybe 2, but you got a year with Joe Flacco as of right now. Then what? Kevin Hogan hasn't played a snap for the Broncos. Garrett Grayson hasn't played a snap in the NFL. So who's next?
Who cares?
Well, the team that hasn't been in the playoffs for 3 seasons because they don't have a true starting quarterback.
Drew Lock's not getting you there. I mean, he might get you there in 3 years. He's not getting you there next year.
That's what we think. It's not necessarily what they think.
You think Drew Lock's helping the Broncos get to the playoffs next year?
No, but if they feel like he can be a starting quarterback.
When?
That's why they're looking at him.
Ah, Nikki.
Give him a year under Joe Flacco.
No. That would make sense if you're rebuilding. If you're rebuilding, you would have traded Chris Harris.
Well, wait.
He'd be Gonski. Gone. We wouldn't be hemming and hawing about Chris Harris if they were. He'd just be gone. Derek Wolfe, see ya. Emmanuel Sanders, bye-bye. That's what you do when you're about to draft Drew Lock. That didn't happen. Not yet.
So what were they doing when they drafted Paxton Lynch?
Making a gargantuan mistake. It was one of the most epic mistakes in the history of the Broncos. And it defies all
logic.
Well,
in hindsight, at the time it was applauded. At the time it was applauded.
Not by me. Not by people with a brain in their head. Not by people that have analyzed what quarterbacks, except for Aaron Rodgers and Dan Marino, have done who have been drafted in the 20s. You want to talk about a trail of tears? You want to talk about a graveyard of terrible quarterbacks? Study what happens in the 20s. And the reason why is these are already playoff teams. If you're a playoff team, Nikki, not a championship team, you're a playoff team. You are in the Super Bowl. If you're in the Super Bowl, you're 31 or 32. You're in the 20s.
I'm looking up every quarterback that was drafted.
Go for it. It's fun. You'll love it. J.P. Lossman, Brandon Whedon, Johnny Manziel, Brady Quinn, Tim Tebow. Check them out. They're awesome. There's Aaron Rodgers and there's Dan Marino. I'm already telling you they exist. Go look at them. I know there's only 11 teams have ever done it in the history of the NFL. Broncos and the Browns have done it three times each. Tommy Maddox, Tim Tebow, Brady Quinn, Brandon Whedon, Johnny Manziel, and forgetting the last one.
Thank you so much. God bless y'all.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers, 24.
I already told you there's exceptions to every rule. And by the way, in that draft, this was a huge mistake in that draft. Aaron Rodgers was supposed to be a top five guy. That was the infamous draft where he's being embarrassed with the cameras on him the entire time. The draft blew it that year. They blew it with Marino too in 83, but 83 was loaded with quarterbacks. Six drafted in the first round. And then Gary Kubiak in like the seventh round. I think in 83, there were like six quarterbacks drafted in the first round, and the next quarterback wasn't even drafted until like the fifth round. It might have been Gary Kubiak, something like that.
Hold on a second. Yeah, there were...
The 20s are brutal. Yeah. Now, if you jump up like the Ravens did, Nikki, at 32, you're smart. First of all, you already have a first-round pick, and now you're getting a fifth-year option on a possible quarterback. That's a smart move. The Broncos were so stupid with Paxton Lynch, it defies imagination. First of all, they were in the 20s, not the 30s, and they moved up to get Paxton Lynch.
My issue with that pick wasn't where they drafted him, how they drafted him. It was more of, it didn't seem like they talked to the kid much before they drafted
him. No,
they're not. I always remember that quote that Paxton gave. Well, they didn't really put me on the board much when they brought me in, but... No, I don't know. This is
they
just
didn't talk to Paxton Lynch. They didn't talk to Bradley Chubb. Looks like they lucked out there. They didn't really spend the right type of quality time with Garrett Bowles.
Bradley Chubb was a much different type of player.
Bradley
though.
Chubb
That's not really a
was
fair
as big of a panic pick as you could ever find. They didn't mock him. They didn't talk to him.
Panic pick.
Panic.
He was the best defensive guy on the board.
No, he wasn't. Derwin James was.
No.
Yes.
I would have taken, not on
your board.
Better,
he was the best. He was an all pro player. Denzel Ward had a fantastic year until he got a concussion.
Wait, so are you insinuating Bradley Chubb was a mistake?
Not him as a person, not him as a player, but in terms of a strategy for the Broncos, it doesn't get much worse than what they did.
Wow.
And I can explain it more, and it shows you why Drew Locke would be a disaster. I mean, a absurd disaster. We'll do it with football at four next.